Actually, gender ideology really reinforces regressive stereotypes. Again, straight in, this is a school resource. I mean, can you see how you're setting vulnerable girls now, potentially on a pathway to distress, to cross-sex hormones, to potential sterilization? My mum and I went to the GP. We were referred to lots of services that helped me realize I was trans. You had a girl who was, you know, just wearing jeans.
Yeah.
Two sentences down, she's trans. That sentence tells kids it's an option to stop their puberty.
It just makes me so angry.
Oh, it's absolute horror. Safeguarding has been undermined.
Do you think people actually realise how invidious and pervasive all of our schooling is now? I don't trust my children's schools at all.
Kids are going home and saying to their parents, "Mum, I think I was born in the wrong body."
For the wrong to rule, the good must just stand idly by.
Hello and happy weekend. I'm not allowed to say Sunday because apparently it doesn't always go out on Sunday. Today, I am lucky to be joined by Caroline Fisk from Conservative Women, which also happens to be the day that the Policy Exchange report has come out on gender ideology in schools and makes some pretty sobering reading, which we'll probably get into later. Caroline, thank you for joining me. The first thing that struck me when I was looking through the report this morning was this idea of what gender distress is. Mm. What does that mean to you?
Okay, so I think people are trying to find a neutral term so that we can all come together and discuss it, to talk about the fact that so many young people now, primary school children, secondary school children, are saying that they're uncomfortable with their sex. Sometimes they say they're uncomfortable with their gender. And so then identifying they might have been born in the wrong body, they don't feel like a girl or a boy, they want to use new pronouns. And for a very small number, they'll end up on a route towards cross-sex hormones and surgery. So we're using that term now, gender distress, really to talk about that.
So, and it's deliberately to try and take the emotion out of the conversation.
I was interested that Policy Exchange had used that term. Mm. I don't think we should say that's normalised now, that everyone's saying that. I think people in the past have said gender dysphoria, and I think that's a medical term, and it would be wrong for us to say every child, because there's so many now, that are going home and saying to their parents, you know, please, you know, I'm a boy, but please call me she, her, or I think I'm a girl. It would be wrong to say, oh, they have gender dysphoria. So that's a way of bringing it back up and sort of saying, you know, they've latched onto an idea, it's a fashion, it's a trend.
Yeah.
So I think it's good. It's a lighter term to allow us to discuss it without immediately medicalising it.
Mm. So in a funny way, when I was young, the trend, if you will, or the obsession of the youth was anorexia,
yeah.
Which I'm not sure how prevalent that is nowadays, or whether it's even in the same sort of family. Would you say that it might be?
Yeah, I definitely think it's in the same family. I absolutely want to make clear I'm not, you know, a doctor or trained medically, but it absolutely seems to be in that family of teenage girls, you know, feeling really uncomfortable with their bodies and doing something to their bodies.
I'm not a girl. Mm. I'd like, just like to make clear. My name is Lawrence, and my pronouns are, I don't have any fucking pronouns, sorry. But it's that idea that it is a catastrophically huge change that women, girls go through to become women, isn't it? You know, in the fact that
you
they're
know what?
Going to...
Again, I don't want to normalise that. That it's a little bit like this menopause thing we have now, that we are catastrophising life.
Yes,
so
no, that's a good point.
I actually want to rein back a bit on that and say I think it's really a big deal for some girls, but for plenty of girls, it's just something you go through.
Yeah.
You know, come on. This is how it's been throughout history. So now I think we have to say there's an ideology, a fashion, and that's why we're coming back to that term gender distress. We can talk about this as a fashion, a social trend, and not something that's completely anchored to teenage angst. I think it can be talked about as lightly as a trend, something coming at people from TikTok, social media, and sadly, through schools.
Yeah, we'll get onto this. But if you're saying it's in the same family as anorexia,
I think
and in schools,
spectrum.
Yes,
a spectrum.
But on the spectrum, yeah. But schools would not promote anorexia.
Absolutely.
So this is very, very, very different.
And to be really careful here, nor would they affirm it. So schools might push back at us and say, of course, we're not promoting it, but nor would they affirm it. And that's really what's different with this, that adults, schools, ideology seems to be affirming this form of distress.
Okay, so let's dig into that a bit. Mm. So I find the word gender, the little phrase gender affirming care, one of the most terrifying phrases that I've ever listened to. Mm. You know, it's like going, it's good to work towards mutilating irreversibly your body.
Yeah.
Where do you think this is coming from, this desire to affirm a child? Is it coming from a kind place to go, you're an individual and therefore, you know, you may need 100 different pronouns to describe yourself? Is it coming from a good place or is it coming from a slightly dark
place? I think that there must have been somewhere some original roots which were kind and good. And there's been a few whistleblowers who have come out of American gender clinics. And if you could speak to one of those people who've come out. So they're people who say, we approach this from a kind place. We thought this must be the right thing. But I can't see any kindness now. I can only see an ideology that is intent on disrupting.
Yeah, well, we saw it.
And disrupting children. But I think there's something going on here about disrupting our society.
Yes, undermining simple things like families and biological sex and reality. Yeah. There's a deep unreality to all of this.
Yeah.
So Miriam Kate stood up in Parliament to talk about these third sector providers and you know, and what was being taught in school. And this, I've got it on my phone, which fell off my lap. But that you have bought, because she was asked by the BBC to provide evidence of this. But so you've bought a couple of bits in. Can you talk us through
I've bought lots in, and we can spend as little time on it or as long on it as you like. So
we should hold up the bits to the camera.
Yeah, so this is from somebody called Chameleon. Honestly, it's just straight in here. None of this, like, I'm introducing you to an ideology or an idea, just straight in to the kids. Admittedly, these are not primary. These are 14 to 16.
Yeah.
Where do the following genders sit in the Venn diagram? Cis male, cis female. Straight in there, normalising the idea.
Where did the cis come from? So cis means that you're just naturally, it comes from the oppression.
Okay, so, you know, the idea is that you're a cis male. So rather than you just being a male,
it was easier.
Again, it's normalising this idea that it's potentially unusual for you just to be comfortable in yourself.
Right.
I mean, that's how extreme this is, that no longer male-female, cis-female, somebody who's comfortable in their body and their gender, thereby implying the normality of not being comfortable.
So, and the word cis itself, what does it, is it short for something?
I think it's some, like, say it's Latin, Greek for same. Or comfortable. I'm not sure, actually.
Right, yeah.
Somebody could look that up while we're talking.
Yeah.
But so straight in there, cis male, cis female, trans, non-binary, gender queer, agender, intersex. So
agender.
You know what?
Chameleon. Again, so this is from a company called Chameleon.
So this
Chameleon.
Is a provider called Chameleon.
And that's a third sector provider. Mm-hmm. So when you're a person who's going to teach their RSE or PSHE class, who's not usually or often a professional, if there is such thing, they Google it.
So
they?
I think this is a problem that teachers have, schools have become very scared of this area. So they think if we go to a third party provider, we'll solve it and we can tick a box. And so you can see it's been very lucrative for these companies to patch some slides together.
So they'll have to pay for this?
Yeah.
The school will have
generally. I can't say for that one. There's lots that are available for free. So I've got a Stonewall one here, which any school can just download.
Yeah.
Chameleon might be free. It might be chargeable.
Well, I know Twinkle
and so then
is
they
chargeable.
Make nice money out of... I can flick through and show you some of the more interesting ones in here.
Yeah, do. Please do.
But, you know, I just want to go back that, you know, there's no science in that.
No.
And there's no introduction to it.
It's just emotional.
There's no, you know, we're going to teach you about this idea, this ideology. It's presented as true to our children. Okay, so here, remember how this ideology, it's meant to be liberating about finding your true self, and it's also meant to be moving away from gender stereotypes.
So why do they want to move away from gender stereotypes?
Okay, so the idea is that it's liberating.
It's not, though.
Well, you know what I find sort of offensive about it? It's the idea that all of us were stuck in our stereotypes. Like, you right now are stuck in your stereotype. I right now am stuck in... I mean, seriously?
Cis male, cis female.
It's just two people sitting here, isn't it? Mm. Talking, and yet the idea is that somehow you're boxed in and I'm boxed in, and now these people are liberating themselves. But actually, gender ideology really reinforces regressive stereotypes. Again, straight in, this is a school resource. So I think this person, they're a girl. I felt I was becoming more male than female.
It's not a question of feelings.
So what do we all think that means, right? So immediately we've got a stereotype coming at us. Mm. You know, I'm feeling more male than female. Even though I hadn't come out or transitioned at that point, I was dressing and acting more male rather than female. What do we mean by this? It's just the most stereotyping thing. So you imagine girls sitting there, loads of girls are not interested in sort of high heels and makeup.
Yeah.
Right? So the implication for those girls, if actually they really couldn't care less about those things, they're acting more male than female.
It's very simplistic.
They're potentially trans. I mean, can you see how you're setting vulnerable girls now, mm-hmm. potentially on a pathway to distress, to cross-sex hormones, to potential sterilization? A slide in a school for everybody boxing them into stereotypes and for the vulnerable few causing real damage. Mm. My mum and I went to the GP. We were referred to lots of services that helped me realise I was trans. One thing I really hate about it is the way it's just within a couple of sentences. You know,
you're trans in two sentences.
At the top of a PowerPoint slide, you had a girl who was... you know, just wearing jeans.
Yeah.
Two sentences down, she's trans. The doctor has affirmed it. And if I can just make an aside on this idea that you're not allowed to challenge that, you've got to affirm it. And we've got a bill potentially going through Parliament, which says that you have to affirm people in their new gender identities. Let me just go first. I didn't want to stop my puberty, which was an option. Imagine saying to kids
you're sterilizing
in
yourself
a classroom
is an option.
That it was an option. Again, a slide from a supposedly reputable professionals coming in to do this. That sentence tells kids it's an option to stop their puberty.
It just makes me angry.
Oh, it's absolute horror.
I can see that it's all part of the diversity, equity and inclusion, and it's all part of trying to give everyone an equality of opportunity as well, so it sort of comes out of that thing. But how this cannot just be completely dispensed with the minute anyone with half a brain looks at it, I mean, don't know.
You know what, I agree. Let me finish on this one slide. Look, now I'm older, I'd classify myself as genderqueer rather than a trans man. So imagine if everyone has said, oh, we must affirm this person, we must go straight towards puberty blockers. Actually, they've decided they weren't trans after all. So what's even more stupid about this ideology, they've sort of disproved it. We've gone all the way in one slide, sort of ending up disproving it all because they realised they weren't a trans man after all. As I say, imagine if they'd been affirmed, imagine if they'd gone on to puberty blockers.
Well, imagine what
a slide in a classroom.
But I can remember myself when I was young going through all sorts of emotional torment, you know, as you go through puberty. It's hardly a calm time in your life to catch something like that at the wrong time.
I think that's
go,
it.
You could go anywhere.
Yeah.
Well, you could leave school that day completely converted to the cult.
Well, by the way, so kids are.
I know, I've
kids
seen it.
Are going home and saying to their parents, Mum, I think I was born in the wrong body.
That, there's something about that, without wanting to get too spiritual about it, there's something about that which is so anti-religion as well, isn't it? That, you know, the whole idea is that you're made in the image of God and that therefore, you know, that's going, no, you're not. you're not at all. It's sort of, it's as you sort of said earlier, you alluded to earlier, it's the destruction of everything that we base society on.
Yeah.
And it seems to have a malevolent deliberance about it.
I mean, listen, I have reached the point that I think it's malevolent.
Well, we can tell it's malevolent.
Yeah.
Because you cannot take a child and who is going through a very confusing time, offer them the option, especially if they're feeling uncomfortable about their body, and offer them the option of permanently sterilizing themselves or mutilating themselves as a cure.
Yeah.
That's what that is.
I mean, I agree. Yeah, I'm sounding too cautious. I guess I have to think that there were people who started this that thought they were coming from a good place.
But it comes from a horrible place. Yeah, all of that stuff is horrible.
I'm absolutely willing to say now, I think the whole thing is
it's just
destructive. And it's harming children, it's harming women's rights. But for me, and I think this is why it was interesting for Conservatives to finally get involved in the debate, is the undermining of really the grounding of our society in science, reason, free speech, public debate. That's
parents,
how we get on.
Parents. It's so important.
The authority of parents. And so it's out to just sort of bulldoze that. And so, you know, we really need to be speaking out about it. Be courageous.
Well, they say,
fight it.
But this is, so from the report itself.
The Policy Exchange report.
33% of secondary schools did not say they would inform the designated safeguarding need or a medical practitioner when a child discloses gender distress. So that totally changes the in loco parentis relationship that we have with the educational system.
Mm-hmm.
It undermines it completely and utterly, flawlessly. And I've just realised, we're not going to be able to put this on YouTube, but I'll have to go on Rumble. I've just realised that. You cannot.
Why?
Because you can't discuss anything to do with this on YouTube at all.
Yeah.
They give you a hard strike, so bollocks to it. We'll keep going. It's fine. It's still, everyone watched it. But okay, what's the one that really upset me? Because it's all about being upset.
Well, we can talk about that one for a bit.
Okay, yeah. Sorry, I'm getting distracted.
Well, some of these things you end up finding you've got nothing to say about them. Sorry, because they're so sort of just hopelessly awful. But again, that will have come through ideology. There will have been third-party providers who have informed schools that there is no need to report this to the parent. So again, schools have been told this. And parental engagement has been undermined, and safeguarding has been undermined.
Do you think people actually realise how invidious and pervade all of our schooling is now? I don't trust my children's schools at all.
That's a statement. I guess I want to be cautious about agreeing with that. I think.
But you don't have to agree with that. Do you think that people are aware? Because our polling says they're not. That what their kids are being taught.
I think there's just a huge mix and disparity. And I know there are schools trying very hard to sort of stay back from this.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, there was a 2019 Relationship and Sex Education Guidance that said you must introduce the idea of gender identity into schools. So this is what really opened the gates for all of this. Schools, of course, as you can imagine, what is this concept? We have to teach it. Let's get in the third-party providers.
The Conservatives were in power in 2019.
Yeah, I know. I think that I can't wait for somebody to write the history of this whole thing. And really, gender ideology took over every institution in the country.
Mm.
I don't think there's a big employer that has been able to resist it, whether in the private sector, charity, or in government. So looking forward to that history being written. But it was Tesco, it's Barclays.
It's Waitrose.
As an aside, I went to get some money out the other day. Probably the last time I took money out. You know, we're all using cards now. But, you know, I approached the bank machine.
Pride flag.
Oh, no, it was a trans-identifying male, you know, there looking up at me and sort of making some statement that I supposedly had to endorse, really.
So that must be Barclays, ESG, isn't it?
You're just like, what? ESG,
Education Social Governance stuff. That's got to be that,
doesn't it? The phrase I'm familiar with is...
DIE. So DIE is the cultural
version.
The business version is ESG, which is they get points for it.
Yeah, okay, so a lot of... Almost again, there was a point, and it might still be true, that almost every big corporate in this country was a member of Stonewall's Workforce Equality Index. And yeah. So they get points. I mean, it's just embarrassing to discuss it. I mean, it's just too absurd. There's a sort of 30-page document from Stonewall sort of listing all the things that they should be doing. And then companies submit back to Stonewall everything that they've done.
Yeah.
And then Stonewall come back and comment on that. And so, you know, Stonewall might have said, you know, what to Barclays, to all the big banks.
What are you doing for...
What more could you do? And, you know, for somebody to come up with the idea, well, why don't you put it on the cash point? And I just think it's really interesting. It's reached the point it would have taken a brave individual in that meeting to say, you know what, no. And I think that's what we've reached, that we're really often to big employers now. It's really hard for any one individual to say no. This is very successful ideology. The minute you say no, there's the idea that you're transphobic.
Okay, but let's say I am transphobic, by the way.
Okay.
I'm not transphobic in terms of the fact that it's an irrational fear. Mm. It's a totally rational fear. Mm. I think it's fundamentally dangerous because I think several things. I think it's very homophobic, the trans movement, mm-hmm. particularly. I think it trans is away the gay. Is what it's seeking to do.
Well, there's evidence of that often. From the GIDS clinics that I think it might even be, again, let's, you know, we could go back and get the right figures, but I think in society there's, you know, under 10% of people, women and men, actually turn out to be gay, lesbian. But I think at the GIDS clinic, over 50% of the children, young people, are saying they're same-sex attracted. So precisely that's who's being ultimately sterilised. Or their bodies being mutilated. So absolutely agree with that phrase, transing away the gay.
So we've had an example of where the actual real life danger of this, we've had this in Tennessee over the weekend, the beginning of the week. A young girl has gone to school and has said, and has been affirmed in school. She's gone home to a very religious family. The parents have said no. Mm-hmm. It's made her deeply, deeply unhappy, and who knows what the motives are, but all we do know is she went back to her own school and was specific in who she killed. Mm-hmm. So this isn't just child's play and messing around. This is taking very vulnerable people and exploiting them to spread an ideology, and that's what it is. So that's what I mean. I'm so trans... It's not transphobic. I'm anti... transgenderism.
Yeah, so in terms of all the research that goes on in this area, something which I think is under-researched and it would be fantastic for people to look into it is how vulnerable people are latching onto this ideology, because it gives them a very strong purpose.
Belonging,
sense of identity. And once you've got that it's vulnerable people.
Autistic kids.
Again, going into the GIDS clinics, we could look up the statistics, but it's a huge percentage are on the autistic spectrum. And as I understand it, that ends up being very black and white thinking. And very, you know, once you're onto an idea, you're onto it.
So you would have thought then at that situation with either a vulnerable child or an autistic child, what do they respond to the most? Structure.
Yeah.
So you've got, when confronted with two structures, you've got a very tried and tested method, which is the nuclear family and the support networks of friends and all of that. And then you've got this sort of, I use inflammatory language because I think you should. It's grooming. Because even on my phone, right, if I open my phone and I go to the news section and I read a couple of Guardian articles or a couple of Telegraph articles, it will constantly feed me more Telegraph, more Guardian.
Yeah.
So the kid just goes to the class, goes home, goes into their Google, searches up a thing. Their feed will be full of this stuff. Mm-hmm. So they're already on an emotional journey down towards the ultimate physical journey, aren't they?
Yeah. Well, can I just say, because controlling social media is one thing. In schools in the UK, there are LGBTQIA+ clubs. And to use your strong language, grooming, the older kids who will almost uniformly within that club be trans-identifying, bringing through the younger kids. So, you know, I'd be happy to use the term grooming in that situation.
It's a heavy escalation in a way, isn't it?
It's happening in our schools, yeah. Kids being brought into this ideology. And I think, in a way, the way we can say that is true is I think, and I'd love to be proven wrong, that it would be a brave teenager who said, actually, I'm lesbian. Well, and I'm not interested in this wider stuff. Or you know, I'm a gay boy, or I think I'm a gay boy. You know, that even that would be courageous. In the group, you're much more steered towards, you know, one of these neo-identities, or generally saying you're queer and this kind of thing, or I'm LGBTQ. So you're kind of forced into the ideology. Mm. In the CAST report, the percentages who said they were same-sex attracted and autistic spectrum, but and comorbidities is another one, which we can discuss.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, so talk to me about... So we've got the GIDS report, which we've just looked at. So
CAST report.
CAST report, sorry. Yeah. And so we've got autism being one of the things.
Yeah.
Homosexuality being one of the things. And then you've got body comorbidities.
Well, again, coming back that I'm not originally, you know, a medic in any sense, but this term comorbidities, depression... sort of other anxiety around your body, or family issues, you know, broken home. There almost wouldn't be a child who wasn't in one or more of those categories. And yet people, as I understand it, they were being affirmed.
Mm.
There's very little questioning, therapy, suggestion about other pathways.
And what I'm sensing from you is you're always trying to keep the conversation open and light and not descend to where America is going to in terms of... And, you know, I was thinking that America has obviously got... Because they've got the states' rights and they do things in a different way, you know, one state will react to the way another state works. But your focus is to keep the conversation open and lighter so that we can keep the actually start it with parents rather than immediately demonize, which is what I feel I'm slightly doing.
Right. Oh gosh, I'm not quite sure what you're saying there. I guess one thing where America is going to try and fight back against this ideology is lots of bans.
Yeah, book banning, don't say
yeah,
gay,
but... book banning and banning talking about this in schools. And you know, it's interesting. Okay, two things. One, we're just a different country and we do things differently, but even if, you know, I was king and could do it differently, I still don't think I would go down the ban route. I mean, kids are just getting gender ideology, as you've said, on social media every day. The idea that schools shouldn't talk about it, I personally think would be completely wrong. I now think it's reached the point, funnily enough, that in PSHE or RSE, these are relationship and sex education, we should be talking about it, and you know, teachers should be the adults in the room.
Why don't we ban RSE?
Just take yeah, I think this is a great question.
Take it out.
What
Rip
I would
out.
Love is for all of us to have a conversation about that and to say, just take all of it back out of schools, and schools need to refocus back on science, maths, English, sports, music, arts, and that these conversations are for parents and communities.
Yeah.
One thing would be if we did that, if we said just take the whole lot out and then had an adult conversation about what would we put back in?
Well, yeah, what's wrong with putting something back in which is a bit more civic-minded, like teaching kids how to public speak, something like that?
Oh, great.
You know?
Yeah.
Because surely if the job of government is to give everyone a fair crack of the whip in life, you know, through the mechanisms of the state, then having a kid from a deprived background who's not very confident, certainly these comorbidities, autistic children, whatever, to give them time, space and effort to stand up and express themselves in public, to me would seem an absolutely wonderful idea.
I totally agree. So it would just be, given how bad all of this has got, a great opportunity to say, pull it all out. Let's all have a good look at what ended up in there. I mean, so much ended up in there. One thing I would say is, whenever there's a problem in society, we tend to say the schools need to deal with it. So I think you could almost name any problem, and somebody has said, right, schools should be teaching kids about that. So, you know, we might want to look at porn and say, okay, are we really seriously going to say that the school should just not go there, and that's a conversation for parents? I haven't got the answers. Let's have the debate, because at the moment...
We had porn at school when we were kids, so, you know, and that sort of strange thing of the person who leaves the stack of porn mags in the woods, you know, which all young boys will have encountered
absolutely.
When they were younger.
And we didn't end up discussing it in school. It's just, yeah, the kids dealt with it.
Yeah.
And I think evolutionary-wise, there's really something there that the kids deal with it. Like, you know, when kids are discovering their sexuality, it's rough and ready, just about everybody would say. Yeah. It wasn't a beautiful process. But there's something about kids dealing with it. And then I think a teacher actually said to me something really good, and it stuck with me. When the adults try and get involved and start talking to the teenagers about it, there's a pervy element.
Yeah,
don't you think that's brilliant? And this teacher said to me that you've got some third-party provider who's come in and is going on about all this stuff.
Yeah.
The kids kind of have to sit back. If it was one of their teachers coming in and there's a much closer relationship, and then the kids can call them out and say, sir, this is pervy.
Mm.
And so that was an argument actually about getting rid of third-party providers. If we're going to do it, get the teachers to do it.
Yeah.
Because they're going to know the kids, and the kids are going to be better at actually reasserting some boundaries. But and then back to what we were talking about, taking the whole lot out and kind of accepting that throughout history, throughout our evolution, there has been something about teenagers sort of sorting through this for themselves. And it wasn't perfect.
Yeah.
But we've got to ask, have we made it better? This huge adult involvement.
Well, in Wales, Kinnishwib was saying to me that in Wales, the kids are learning all of this stuff in school at a very early age, not just the gender ideology, but also some of the more kind of, I think, kind of inappropriately aged sex stuff.
Yeah.
And she said they're going out into the playground and trying it on each other.
Well, I've got this. This is from...
I sound like such a prude.
Swindon Council. I mean, you know what? I mean, you can choose what you
prude or not.
Say, but, you know, imagine being in a class... I would say that throughout history, we considered this a private matter.
The following cards would definitely go to the agree end of the continuum. Masturbation can help you learn about your body. Before even thinking about having sex with another person, it can help to have a good understanding of how your own body works. Yep, I mean, that's just
read all the words in yellow out. And
masturbation is normal. Masturbation is completely normal. Not masturbating is normal. It's okay not to masturbate. People who only masturbate when they haven't got a sexual partner. People masturbate for lots of reasons, like when they're queuing for shopping. Women don't masturbate. It's normal for all gender to masturbate. Everybody masturbates. People make different choices about masturbation. It's normal to masturbate. It's normal not to masturbate. Only teenage boys masturbate. Mostly people of all genders of all ages masturbate or have at some time. You can catch STIs if you masturbate on your own. Can you? No. Oh, no, you can't. Thank God. I mean, not that I ever
masturbate. Yeah, but you see what I'm saying? Like, I think, you know what? So
Stard.
If you're a teenager and your teacher is... God. You're going to say, sir, you know, you're going to call your teacher out. The idea of adults,
it's pervy, and
I think actually, you see, that one of my points is that if you could say get the third-party providers out, and then the kids will actually be better able to kind of say to the teachers, sir, we do not need you talking to us about this.
No, we don't. Yeah. But hang on, let me be devil's advocate on that one.
Mm.
Right? There is a stigma around and shame around masturbation when people are younger. So I don't think there's actually anything too bad about saying that everybody does masturbate.
Lawrence, you're already arguing. We've taken RSC out and you're saying, right, let's have an adult discussion about what should go back in.
God, I'm not a politician, eh?
See, I personally would say that's something private that kids have...
They'll work it out by themselves.
And here's something else I want to say, which I think is a really important point, is everything's been normalised around extroverts, right? And it might well be that the extroverted kids, which I expect that you were, quite happy with this, quite fun, you know? There's a whole lot of introverted, private kids who this will be really transgressing their boundaries and confusing them. And... we're creating a world for extroverts, and there's a lot of introverted, young people
who
do not want to discuss this in the classroom.
So that's where the narcissism comes from, the extroverting, the extroverts. By the way, just to correct you, I was a strangely sort of shy child.
Okay.
Then
I bet you wouldn't have been that happy going.
No, I wouldn't, and I certainly wouldn't have been happy with using DAMs for oral sex. DAMs are small pieces of flavoured latex. No, thank you.
By the way, because this is a council, really, it makes me laugh. You know,
this is an actual council.
This is a council, so if anybody was trying to say no, these were small third-party providers, this never was going to end up in a school. They were just trying their luck. This a council resource.
It's also really normalising the Blue Hair Brigade, isn't it? Yeah. It's basically saying if you don't dye half of your hair pink or yellow, then you're not real.
Yeah. Well, for me, that one, you know, because the council often you see going to someone's house and they've put up the recycling.
Mm.
Yeah. So Monday, Tuesday, recycling. And then next week, put on your fridge that thing. Well, at the back, the guide for your...
Oh, for your gender.
The guide for your condom, you know. Stick that up on your fridge from the council. I mean, it's just absurd, isn't it?
It's strange, the difference.
It's just sort of absurd.
Outer calls. Okay, I can't go there. Well, there's your proof.
By the way, so some of the sexual practices in here that they're normalising, again, you know, they would transgress people's boundaries. Kids, if they want to discover them for themselves, fine. That's what people have always done. But for a council to be sort of normalising stuff that lots of people actually wouldn't end up doing in their lives, it's transgressing their boundaries. And this whole thing about, you know, a lot of them, the boys would like to do it, but the girls wouldn't. And so it's saying to the girls, come on, this is normal, putting pressure on girls, transgressing their boundaries. And then we get the Me Too movement. What a surprise. Well, the council was saying it's okay. I mean, you know.
Well, but I can see how it's, I can see just from reading this that it looks like a reaction to traditionalism in a way. You know, it does look like a reaction to it. It's like going, we've obviously as a society had a sort of shame-based relationship with sex in the past, you know, and certainly through, I mean, I had to go to chapel four times a week when I was at school, and we certainly didn't cover this in chapel, that this is a sort of secular uncoupling from a spiritual relationship with, you know, that we,
yeah,
that our society's
about. I mean, you know what,
around.
As I say, I got involved in all of this stuff through gender ideology, and it's moved towards this more discussion, and I think that's an interesting discussion. I guess I would say, you know, I'd like to say throughout history that, you know, humans functioned better when sex was quite private.
Mm.
And
well, it is private. You, yeah, don't, you, yeah, you, yeah, don't walk out in the street and see people.
Absolutely.
You do in some cities.
So the idea of bringing it out into the public, like, put it this way, you wouldn't go to a board meeting and there's some discussion about masturbation, would you? So the idea that a bunch of, in this case, I think that one was like sort of 14-year-olds, you know, 30 of them all having a discussion about masturbation. I mean, it's absolute adult imposition of a transgression, because we know that as adults we don't do it. So why are we enforcing it on the kids?
Because we want a totally different set of children than we are, maybe. But there's also this, is, I know this is for 14-year-olds, but they do this for 4-year-olds in Wales, don't they?
Yeah, I don't know. Again, for me, because I would like to have a slide just before I said that that's correct, yeah.
So where's it going to go? What's going to happen? Obviously, we've had the Policy Exchange report out today. You are working very closely with the Conservative Party, who are receptive to that.
Well, again, you know, just I would love to say very closely, you know, we're a lobby group. Conservatives for Women was set up to focus on this issue. And, you know, I would say we, but honestly, the entire spectrum of people who have set themselves up to fight these issues, Safe Schools Alliance, Transgender Trend, there's a Labour Party group, Lib Dem, Conservatives. There's been so many of us on the case. And I think we are finally being successful that the government has committed to a review of relationship and sex education guidance. Which and there's going to be a public component to that.
What does it, so explain to people what that means.
Okay,
I'm
so
going to stop smoking because you're back, obviously not enjoying
No, not at all.
Professor Nutt was right.
Joe, so I said before in 2019, there was this new relationship and sex education guidance. And one of the elements was gender identity.
Mm.
But on the back of that, I think that's where we've seen not just this whole gender ideology, but all this discussion about, you know, sexual activities going into schools. And so the government has committed to reviewing it.
Which is a really positive step.
Oh, gosh, completely. I'll just show you something here. I'm not sure if I brought it. You know, it was another third-party provider saying they teach sexual pleasure. And I'm kind of like, you know, nobody ever said, yeah, let's teach sexual pleasure at school. And so it's just sort of like, why? When did that come in? Let's just stand back and have the debate again. And what do we think should be in there? What's appropriate for a school? What's appropriate for big bunches of kids all sitting there together?
Well, you raised it.
Just rethink it.
You raised it earlier that there's something quite private about it. And then if an adult comes in, it can be a bit seem pervy.
Well, see, this is like, for me, one of the solutions I would like to come out of it is that we just chuck out the third-party providers.
Right.
Because so that's the solution. Kids are so much better with the teacher that they know.
Yeah.
And I think even sort of some of those materials, if the teacher puts them out, just say, sir, you know, we don't need you.
But the, yeah. I can see a problem with that, which is that you will have a teacher, an ideologically driven teacher, who is like, yes, I do know better. And I am going to teach them about pleasure because it's important they learn about pleasure. And it's important that they know, very much know that, you know, about transgenderism and how important it is, and they may be born in the wrong body. So who guards the guards?
Okay, so first of all, I'd say life isn't perfectible, you know, so I personally don't think we can go down the American route of just banning it, because gender ideology is all over social media. So I don't think it would work just to sort of say, well, that's banned. But so another hugely important component is to have all lesson plans and the whole sort of curriculum available to parents.
Yeah, which is hard to get. So we actually...
Oh, no, but so that's all come out of the new guidance, hopefully. Well, that's what we should all be pushing for.
Well, we've got... you can do it, actually. I can do a little bit of waving for me and for the Bad Law Project. You can go on to our... Any parents who are interested, go onto the Bad Law Project website. There's two letters. There's a nice one that you can send to your school, which goes, please, can you reveal your RSC... PSHE lesson plans. And then if your school are not nice and they talk about GDPR and stuff in relation to third-party providers, then you can download a very much more serious legal letter, all for free, all our gift to you. Anyway, back to you and I.
Yeah, so it would be great if that was just normal, that it's just all there on the website, or, you know, here's the resource. And, you know, a parent can buy it off, you know, one of these things like, is it TES, whatever that is, you know, these providers of school resources, so that just everybody can look at it.
Should parents be invited to an RSE lesson or a PSHE?
You know, okay, so here's another theme of mine, that this whole thing of how we've outsourced the education of our children, and, you know, as a parent, you sort of drop your kid off at the school gate at 4 and then sort of see them at 18 at the other end. Yeah. It would be really good to renormalize parents getting really much more engaged. And I think because of the way that we've got all these new ideologies, and we're really sort of having quite a breakdown on all agreeing about stuff, so what we teach in our schools is becoming more contentious. And so it's the ideal time to say to parents, you know, sorry, but it is time for you to engage more.
Yeah.
And we really need to spend more time discussing how we're bringing our children up, what we're transmitting to them.
Yeah.
We took it for granted, and I think that's why in the 1950s, you know what, drop your kid off at 4, see them at 18. I think everybody just trusted the model. But now that it's much more contentious, there's also critical race theory.
Oh, yeah.
There's teachers standing up and being very ahistorical about our history, which I think we could just trust in the past that they wouldn't. So a real effort to re-engage parents. And for schools to open up their doors to parents.
Yeah, there has been a fundamental breakdown in trust over stuff like that.
Yeah.
Certainly critical race theory. My youngest son's school did a talk called How Do I Talk to My Child About Race? And
arrogant, isn't it?
I said to the school, they're all millionaires' kids. They don't need to talk about race. You need to give them a lesson in how do I talk to my kid about the fact that he's so privileged? How do I talk to a normal person? Because when I left Harrow, for example, I had no idea how to talk to normal people. I was just some posh kid. So they need to teach them actual life skills instead of creating these. They're all critical theories, aren't they? Because this is critical gender theory. Gender ideology is exactly the same as race ideology. These are the same things. But I have to say, I'm not as forgiving as you are. I want it out. I want them removed, because there's nothing good that I can see from critical race theory at all. And you look where it's going, because America is always the forerunner. You know, they're in San Francisco, which California was not a slave state, and they're giving black people in San Francisco, they're giving them $5 million and a house for $1. That's now passed through San Francisco's legislature.
And yeah, somebody told me that's never going to happen, and it is just virtue signalling.
But it doesn't matter if it's virtue signalling or not. It's there. That's what they spend their time doing.
I think, well, what can we say? You know, people are just becoming ludicrous. So just,
We have to be sane.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're trying to keep things steady.
I think the UK, it's great that we've had... Something's happened in the UK, which I think it would be great to somehow try and document, is the way left and right have come together.
Left and right.
Yeah, to say there's some foundations of our society that we need to protect. And let's start talking about it. And so, you know, we're called Turf Island. And I think on the whole race issue as well, ideally, you know, let's try and sort of put a pause and come back and talk about it and say, is this really how we want to go? Racializing everything? Come on. And we know that most people don't want to.
But it's got a very powerful grip on our culture. Talking about Turf Island, Posey Parker took a trip to New Zealand, which, are you New Zealand? You are New Zealand.
Yeah.
What did you make of that?
Well, for people
who... Do you condone what she did?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much your listeners know. So Posey Parker is somebody who... So she actually creates spaces, like in a public park. People can come and women can just come up and give their testimony. And it is focused on gender ideology. And so women coming up and talking about the importance of single-sex spaces or concerns about children's safeguarding, just everything we've been talking about, she creates those opportunities. I mean, obviously, the scenes in New Zealand were beyond horrific.
We're going to play the scenes of New Zealand.
It was.
Now, Al, let's have a little pause and we'll play it now. Those are the people that want to share bathrooms with women.
I guess for me, you know, the concern is, you know, the mob violence and the police that let it happen. The policing, because the police were there in the background and obviously could see it forming and starting to happen. And maybe at a certain point they were outnumbered, but the fact that they could see it and let it happen. And, you know, I do think it's right that it's not exaggerating to say that Posey Parker could have been killed if she had fallen as she was trying to get out.
Now, that looked,
I'm not sure that she would have
me.
Got up again.
The look on her face, you can see exactly how she felt. She was going, I'm going to die, I'm going to die.
Yeah.
Now,
so,
whether that's the result of the mob
or
not, but again, if you mess with the stability in society...
That's absolutely right. You know, if you mess with our foundations... like the idea that we have free speech. I just think it's really interesting that, you know, because you have all these kids, university students, who say that free speech shouldn't be an ultimate value. The ultimate value should be protection of minorities. But when you saw what happened then, that's what happens when you haven't got free speech anymore. So you think what Posey's trying to say, it's simply trying to say something quite reasonable. We need to protect women's single-sex spaces. And to be denied free speech on that issue and for mob violence to be legitimised. And it's, I hope people are aware, for example, New Zealand's, Auckland's main newspaper.
Oh, yeah.
Really legitimised it.
Show those pics, Al, as well.
There's two cartoons effectively saying to Posey, go home. So that's after the violence.
Yeah.
They were legitimising it. So our main newspaper... And as I understand it, and again, it might be important to get the right research and quotes, but the Prime Minister...
Turds, he called her. Trans-exclusion.
No, I think that's an Australian politician you're thinking about.
Sorry,
So you wait for the New Zealand Prime Minister. Yes, it doesn't matter how left-wing he is, whatever. You have to assume in a liberal democracy they're going to condemn mob violence. And my understanding is that he still hasn't condemned it. So you have to say...
He said it's a matter for the police, didn't he? That's what he said.
It's not a country in which you have free speech.
And that,
or it's not a country you've got effective policing.
Well, also, the problem with ideologies is the only way you... Because they're cult-driven and they're not based on any form of rational reason or common sense, the only thing that can break them down is free speech.
Yeah.
And the only thing that they can't tolerate is free speech.
Mm.
So, you know, it's back to that old argument of the fact that you don't fight for free speech for the people you agree with. You fight for the people you don't agree with.
Mm.
And I think it is a classic example of what happens when you take free speech off the table and you replace it with either gender grievance or race grievance in this case. And you see the power of the mob, and that's really, really frightening.
I think for me, you know, to see the will to violence earlier in some of the footage, and there's people behind, you know, those barricades.
I mean, yeah, yeah.
And so you're kind of like, you know, you've got your protest. These women are over here doing their thing. Yeah, fine. Just their will to push it down and the violence in those people's faces. It's just great to say, okay, let's look at this because we've seen it now. Is this really the road we want to go down? Again, a great opportunity just to pause and say, everybody, can we debate? Is this where we want to go? And you just have to say that the answer is no.
Well, it's not in the media. So, you know, yeah, it was covered by GB News. And yes, it was covered very loosely in some of the media. But it's not on the BBC. Mm. It's not on ITV. It's not on Channel 4. It's not on where most people consume their news content, their media content. So they don't know that this has happened. Mm. So those people that become more and more desperate that this is a massive issue are going to be goaded into a response at some point.
Yeah.
And that's why your call to go, right, for over all of these issues, let's just stop.
Yeah.
Take a step back, allow the heat to go out of it, and then reassess.
So you're absolutely right. So the BBC, you know, if should be willing to discuss it.
They should be just be defunded. I'm like, you're not reporting what's going on.
Well, or if you are, it's pretty biased.
Or it's Gary Lineker's view on gender ideology.
So I'm not sure who they were interviewing, but it's interesting, just on our topic, to go back to it, a BBC News presenter, rather than being quite open, you know, about the resources, just really goading politicians, you know, these resources are not out there, you're exaggerating. Mm. So, you know, really going in with an agenda early on, rather than being willing to be open and to listen about the people who've actually done some of the work.
So how do, so this presents us with a conundrum, all right? The more you give in to an ideologue, so this is why my view on transgenderism is getting more and more solid, actually. Mm. The more you concede to an ideologue, you go, we can't do gender affirmation at 8. Let's not teach them this stuff at 8. Teach them it at 12. But we're not going to do any puberty. Well, okay, we'll think about puberty blockers at 12. No, we'll leave it to 16. Then we'll do it. You know, the more we just give any ground to these people.
No, I'm not talking about giving it ground. I'm talking about, any teaching in schools needs to be fact-based, science-based.
Balanced.
And so a teacher who's talking about gender ideology, because all the kids, we have to, I think, would you agree, there's not a child in the country who's not aware of it. That's how far gone it's gone. Mm. So the teachers actually should be talking about it and saying, none of this is fact. It's got no basis in science. It's regressive. It's restrictive. It's bringing back old stereotypes. Right, what do you think? And of course, some of the kids will bob up and be right behind it. The teacher's got to be the adult in the room and creating a space for open debate about it and just saying there's no science behind it. So it's harmful. Some of the vulnerable ones in this room, if we go along with it, you'd be rendering yourself sterile. So I'd like it in the classroom, free speech, open debate, science-based, fact-based.
See, you're much better. Yeah. You're much better than I am. It drives me mad. I just think the minute they get a little foot in. But you're right to say, keep gender ideology in the classroom, but discuss it for what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I could absolutely get on board with that.
I think you need to, because if the kids are now shutting each other down, which I think they are, the adults have got to reopen a space for them to be able to debate it and discuss it. I mean, by the way, there are grassroots, you know, the kids are fighting back about it. Like somebody said to me, you know, their daughter's friend's little sister was identifying as a blade of grass. You know, so I think kids are...
Oh, she's mean on my mate.
You know what? So kids are, it's just great, you know, but it's sort of embarrassing for the adults.
Yeah.
You know, the kids are the ones who are saying, come on.
So it's
I just want to give you a story on that. And it's from a few years ago. And it's just in America, some, you know, again, a very elite private school. You know, the kids were, boys' toilets and girls' toilets were removed and they're all gender neutral. And a parent was writing about it and saying it was just chaos. You know, like boys were just going into what used to be the girls' toilets and peeing all over the floor. You know, it's fun and kicking each other's doors. And it was interesting, they said that because the adults couldn't fix it, right? The teachers, they'd done it. parents were sort of trying to organise, but while they were trying to organise the kids, and we're talking about primary school kids, after a few weeks of chaos, the kids just went back to their old loos.
Right.
They self-organised. And you kind of just think, what, you know, the shame is on the adults.
Yeah.
For letting that all happen.
So why are the adult, why are the adults like that? So that's, so we're not, yeah, so this, I mean, is, this is something that's been, must be going on for forever. Well, for at least for decades, for this sort of hyper-liberalism of never interfering with anything anybody else does. You know, on that sort of live and let live mantra. Is that where it's come from?
No, see,
because my parents wouldn't be like that at all.
Well, you know what, I would like somebody to write about this and to try and understand how we let things get so far. And I think it is fear.
We're doing a history of documentaries on it.
Yeah. So, right, I'm not a historian, so I feel like I'm saying something pretty basic here. But when you look at some of the times when society has been captured by an ideology, there's been very quick violence very quickly. Like, say, in the Russian Revolution. And so there was a fear for your life very quickly if you transgressed against the new ideology. And I think the way this has worked is very rightly, I think across the 60s and the 70s, we all very much feared being called a racist or a sexist. So that fear of being labelled, we all kind of got used to that. And then this ideology asserted itself really quickly with that fear of being called transphobic. So the same thing operated of fear suddenly getting on top. And that happened almost overnight. This new concept came along, and if you didn't agree with it, you were transphobic. And it's almost before people had time to think, boof, it was in place. And everybody was going along with it.
Yeah, that's interesting. There was, it was very important. Even you know, even as I grew up, it was very important. You didn't want to be labelled in this way, and it still really matters to the vast proportion of society now.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's very, another brilliant way of shutting down free speech.
And so, do you agree? It's fear. Like, I mean, imagine. So you're in. Let's take Tesco's now. What could we think? Okay, so let's put, you know, Pride banners all around the Tesco store, and Pride Week. And you're thinking, you know what, we didn't do this for Mother's Day. We didn't even put big banners around the place for Christmas. So you're thinking, am I going to say no? What's holding you back from saying, you know what, no?
I do say no.
Okay, but you do now. But what would originally have been holding you back?
Well,
fear.
Don't
you think it's fear?
I think it is for the vast portion of people. But ironically, I think there are elements to this which are the unknowables. So certainly when I sort of got thrust into the public eye for saying Britain wasn't racist, I didn't know that that was a landmine. I had a suspicion.
Okay, you stumbled into
it. I had a suspicion. I knew what I was going to say, and I knew I was going to get a bad reaction for it, but I didn't realise just how bad the critical race theorists were going to defend critical race theory and the fact that anyone who happens to have white skin is in some way not able to comment on these things. But I suppose what we've got is we've got that historical fear, which is absolutely right, which it comes from a sense of common decency, actually,
I think,
and societal harmony, which, as you say, has been radically overtaken by this very fast-moving ideology. And your view, which is just to stop, allow the heat out, it's like my mum used to say, if everyone was having a row, don't go to bed. No point in going to bed in a bad mood. Sleep on it, and we'll talk in the morning. And it would always make everything better, wouldn't it? Essentially, we're asking for a great societal. Let's sleep on this and talk in the morning. Is that what you're thinking?
I'm not sure. And like, I think you've taken that from what I'm saying. I guess you've taken that because I said let's not ban things.
Yeah.
I guess I believe in free speech.
Yeah.
So I don't want to ban things. I think all of us who are willing to need to be brave enough just to keep talking about this stuff and invite more and more people into the conversation. And I think we're going there. And then to re-anchor stuff in our roots, like just to, you know, make the call to free speech, the rule of law, effective policing. These are the things which allowed our liberal democracy to grow and allowed us all to live in freedom. Let's go back to those things, is what I'm saying. So rather than go down the route of, like, you know, banning and sort of counter intolerance,
You've taught me something today, which is really good, and what an example of why it is really good to talk about these things. Mm. Can I finish by saying, yes, I agree with what you're saying, but we are, I suppose one of the foundations of liberal democracy and free speech is to be tolerant of everything except intolerance.
Yeah.
Okay. Right? Mm. So is there an extra turn to this rabbit hole, which is we are being greeted with profound intolerance of everything except the ideological values of the values of the ideology. Mm. Therefore, do we not have a duty to resist intolerance fully?
I completely say, agree we have a duty to resist intolerance. I think, you know, signal that we need to end here, but interestingly enough, say Posey Parker, that's a really good example of what you're talking about, because you could say she shouldn't go back out into parks and invite people to speak because it's sort of a magnet. But I think she's going where you're talking about, of trying to proactively resist intolerance, you know, rather than just sort of, well, you know.
But rather than be frightened into submission.
Yeah, so in a way trying to bring it to its head to say we need to sort of call out this intolerance, and we really need to quite proactively at this point keep speaking to try and get past something. So, yeah, look at intolerance and maybe invite it out to speak to us.
Drag it into the sunlight.
Yeah, drag it out. So, you know, we want to talk to you. And that's what all the, I would say, the gender critical movement keeps on doing. It wants to keep on debating.
Caroline Fiske, you're amazing. Thank you for talking to me.
Oh, thank
and where
you.
Can people find you?
Conservatives for Women is where we do our campaigning. Yeah.
Okay. They're brilliant. I encourage you to join them. Thanks for coming.